Everybody
Everybody
wants
wants
to
to
be
be
a
a cat.
cat. Everybody.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Future Considerations. But it's like PHF Future Considerations. It's a great pun, but I don't think it's an auditory one. My name is Eleni. You can follow me on Twitter at StrongForecheck. I will probably accept your follow request if I am private, unless you are weird about it.
Okay, so my name is Dan, and you can follow me at DR Rice Hockey.
And I'm Mike Murphy because I have a last name, unlike my co-hosts. I'm at Dig Deep BSB, but if you're listening to this, you probably know who we are. So thanks for listening. We are still figuring out what we're going to do with this podcast, but generally we're going to record when we want to. That's kind of like the theme of the show, as well as trying to figure out how to pronounce the name of our own show.
Are there other ways to pronounce it?
Well, it's PHF. Do we want to say PHF, PHF, future, the future?
ASMR Mike Murphy trying to say P, H, and F all at the same time.
The day they decided to have PHF and PWHPA and then a PHFPA. I've noticed that the PA for the PHF is now like the Players Association of the PHF to get around that. It doesn't work. It's all just this vegetable soup in my head. Like, I
It's
mean,
a
alphabet
valiant
soup.
effort, though, because I wouldn't have even bothered. I would have been like, let them be confused. I don't
It's too
care.
many. It's too many. Anyway, yeah, we're the Future Considerations, which Michelle J, our leader and producer, found that name, which is very fun.
Queen behavior. Well, I think you guys all know why we decided we were going to record today on January 19th, 2022, which is when we're recording. Yesterday, many of you, as we did, awoke at 6:45 in the morning to your alarms, and it wasn't Santa bringing you a gift. It was the investors of the Premier Hockey Federation, who have apparently decided to invest $25 million in the league, which is awesome. And that was my first impression, is that it was awesome, and I think that is still my impression. It feels bigger every time I think about it. I'm not really good at math, and that number is probably an order of magnitude larger than any number that I can like actually conceptualize. But it's a lot of money, and I'm excited about it personally.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I've done the thing in my head where I've tried to figure out like how much money do we need to pay everyone a living wage and to have things like health insurance, which are very nice things to have. And then you need like operations people and coaches, things like that. Like how many monies do we need? It's a lot of monies. And then we hear 25 million and it's like, okay, that's good. It's very good. And then of course it comes with all these other things like expansion and all that stuff, but this feels like it's the sort of thing we've been waiting for since 2015. And it's this big sign of like, oh, we didn't, I don't know about you guys. I thought it would be another while before this happened, especially after that eerie setback in season two, where that press release made us all kind of have that flashback to those Vietnam flashbacks of like, oh no, are we going back to less money is again? No, more money is again, which is pretty great. But yeah, my first impression is holy crap, that's amazing. And I immediately got emotional because of that Shannon Doyle quote where she was like 100 games played and she was like, it's a little bittersweet because I know there won't be another 100. I'm like, now there will be. Now there'll be
Who
another
knows?
200.
Yeah, the number, like you both have elaborated on, is amazing. My first thought was, this is going to change the perception of a lot of things, and this is what they really needed: somebody that believes in their product and is willing to invest in it. I think I could speak for both of you when I say, if we had the money, we would do it ourselves, right? But unfortunately, that's not the case. We picked the wrong professions. Maybe Eleni picked a better profession than the two of us. But
Didn't.
I think it's a big step forward. It's The timing of it, right before the Olympics, that's kind of a big deal. That wasn't unintentional. And just as you both said too, that's like more money than, you know, I know I'll ever see in my lifetime. And to them, it's probably like pocket change. And how much it means to everybody. You saw all the messaging and or the tweets and the all the quotes in the articles that the players have had to say the last 24, 36 hours now. It's great to see, and hopefully, you know, we just kind of keep the momentum rolling. And I'm excited now for next season. You know, we're not even through this one. We have some really big games coming up and all that, but this is really, really huge stuff.
I'm really excited about the salary cap raising, but I also watch enough sports that it makes me anxious, like as a fan and also as a person separately from being a fan, for two reasons. One of them is I have seen so many sports teams do really stupid shit to fit under the salary cap. And I'm afraid that like especially thinking about Boston as someone who lives here, like they're going to have to, I don't know. I'm scared. I don't want to think about it. I'm just afraid. And I think that with the salary cap thing, it becomes really important for us to know how much everybody's making. Because before it was like, well, some of these people are only making like $5,000 probably. And we don't want to, like, if nobody's getting paid a living wage, does it really matter how much they're getting paid? And my answer to that is yes anyway, but you could kind of make the argument that like, maybe it's okay if they don't release. If the salary cap's going up this much, we need to know how much everybody's making. And not just because the people who run the teams are extremely involved with the teams themselves, and there are, you know, tangled webs that have been weaved. And it's not a bad thing, but I just think that transparency is really important. So we're not like, why is this team bad this year? Oh, it's because they paid one player like $75,000 and everybody else is living on ramen still. Like, I think it's important for us to know. And I think it's important for them to know from a labor perspective, as they move towards organizing into a union, which I'm sure they will do. They need to know how much they're making in comparison to other people. You can't make the decision, I'm going to play in Connecticut next year instead of New Jersey because they can pay me more, if you don't know how much anybody's getting paid for anything.
Yeah, I have a lot of strong feelings about that. I still think back to when the league decided not to disclose player salaries, and they said, we'll leave it up to the players. And we got, I think, two or three. Like, we got Fratty and Pack, and we may have gotten someone else, but then it was like, oh, so it's the onus on media to like hunt down players and say, hey, how much are you making this year? After salaries were cut and everything. And when you think about what a higher cap means, what more money to the player means, you think of how important it is for players to have information for contract negotiations, to know what they're worth. I really, really hope that some of these things I've seen about there not being a cap, a minimum salary, are false, because I think having a minimum salary is essential, especially when you have, you know, players who are making this choice to sacrifice stuff to keep playing hockey. They're trying to find other careers to make this shit work. It's not easy. And I think you need that level of security. You need to know at least what you're making. And that helps to set a ground floor for negotiation. And like, a lot of these players haven't had to have the experience of knowing what they're worth. And I really hope that the PA steps up in a big way now that it has, you know, leadership and everything. We have our player reps, which are public, which is great. But more importantly, we have a head of the PA who I hope really goes to bat for things like, hey, now that we have some of these things, let's figure out, you know, are there limits and are there minimums to, like, oh, let's say if there's a minimum to the percentage of the cap and things like that, instead of a hard number, in case the cap changes again, because you can put things in place where it offers more security. And security for getting paid in professional women's hockey sounds like a really nice thing that I'd like people to have. But I agree with Eleni. Like, I think players should know what everyone else is making. I think players need to be able to advocate and negotiate for themselves, because, like, we've seen a couple players in the past have like representation and stuff from like really small firms. And I'm always like, what could their possible cut be from an agent? Like, we're talking about like, you know, $5,000 to $10,000. Like, well, what is that like? And now that's an exponentially higher amount, and it matters more. Like, the more money that's there, it matters more. And some players will be able to make enough to make a living wage from what we understand, but it's not everybody. So we definitely need to know what everyone's making. It's super important.
What do you think? I've heard this, you both have heard something similar. What do you think about, because like salary cap is we're just talking about how much you're making, you know, signing a contract, but you think maybe some teams owners are a little bit more outgoing than others. And, you know, you sign here for a certain amount, but I'm also going to take care of you and I'm going to provide you with sticks and pads and skates and what, you know, basically whatever you need, apparel, all that, all those things. Or, you know, will this maybe sort of level the playing field a little bit? You know, that was one of the first things I thought of, because I have heard those kind of conversations where, you know, maybe one team, when they go on the road, they're able to have a room by themselves, and other teams, because they have to fly a lot of places, they have to maybe have roommates. You know, those are all interesting things that I'm curious to see how it all plays out going forward with the influx of money and the salary cap rising. I'm not nearly as passionate as you two with the salary thing, although I do see your side of it and I understand it. You know, as a writer, I say this all the time. You know, I kind of just want to focus on the stuff on the ice and write about, you know, those players' stories and things like that. But I do understand the value of what you're talking about, and it definitely has a need. That information needs to be out there again for all the reasons that you so rightfully listed.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes a huge difference. And the other thing that's like, quite frankly, been a serious something that we've really noticed, I think, is that there's like, and this is, I'll bring this up again when we talk about expansion in a second. When you're not paying people a living wage, it's very difficult to have teams in places where people either don't already live or don't want to move. So New Jersey is a good, like the metro area is a good choice for a team, because even if not a lot of the players are from there, that's a place where people, it's easy to find a job that will pay if you can't, you know, get paid a living wage to play. And it's a happen in place with a lot of people. If you're a young person, you would be happy to move there. You're an athlete, it's a fun place to be an athlete. And there are places that we have teams in this league that are a tougher sell. And they're a tough sell for men's athletes too. Like, I think I love Buffalo. I love the Buttes. I have friends on the team and I love them. I think Buffalo is a really tough sell if you're not paying someone a living wage and they're not from there. I think it's really hard for someone who might be able to squeak on to the roster in Boston or in Connecticut, where they could live probably in New York and drive, or in Minnesota where they may be from or whatever. It's really difficult. And especially with Toronto being a team too, it's so hard for Buffalo to compete with that. And it's not fair because they're a great franchise. And I think the salary cap will help that a lot, because how much, if you're Toronto, how much can you reasonably spend before people are going to be like, I mean, they can pay me more in Buffalo and it's right across the border. So I do think it'll level the playing field, hopefully a little bit.
I think that's a great point, especially when you think of things like, you know, how much is Mikayla Grant-Mentis worth? Like, what? Yeah, all of the money. And then you think of, okay, well, Toronto, it's the increasing the salary, because we saw it a lot in especially in the first several years of like, there are teams that seem to have all the toys and a lot of the star players, the bulk of the star players, even after national team players left. But like, you know, look at the first iteration of the Boston Pride. It's not a coincidence things look that way. And then you look at like where talent gravitated to and all the years of being like, go Connecticut Whale.
Who do you have? All of it.
Give them hell. Like, you know, it's
they did.
Super fun. Yeah. And you know what? They did. And more power to the Whale. That's awesome. especially like, you know, when they bring in Miri Räisänen and stuff. But it's wild to think of how this can change the landscape of where talent can play. Because like the point Eleni raises is we've seen so much teams be like, okay, so who can you draw from? Like Minnesota is, I don't know, we're Minnesota. Any player from Minnesota who went to school here, it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah,
it's not that easy for the Whale because the Whale have to compete directly with the Rivers in terms of players who have that, like jobs in the city, living in Jersey City, living in that area. And then Connecticut also technically has to compete with players who can play in Boston. And so, you know, they're kind of the last ones at the trough in terms of the talent. It's not easy. And the Buffalo, you know, with the geographic competition, Toronto is also super significant. And the good thing is there's a lot of local talent to draw from there in Buffalo, but we've had to see teams get super creative. And like, even think of what Nate Oliver has done in terms of, you know, bringing in players from overseas for an opportunity to play here, to live here. Like, they've had to get really creative. And now this will provide an opportunity for like innovative thinkers like Nate, who, you know, full disclosure, is a buddy of mine, so I won't hesitate to sing his praises, but Nate gets to be creative with a much bigger piggy bank.
I'm so excited to see what they do.
That's so exciting. You get to keep the talent you've been developing because they've been passionate about that. All those young players in Buffalo, CJ and MJ Peltier, like develop those players to keep those, that young core there. And you can say, you know what? You could play in Toronto for this much, or you can play here. We'll give you another $5,000.
I'm also thinking about like the players who are graduating from college this year. Like, I think this is, I'm pretty sure Katrin Lonergan is a redshirt senior. She plays at Clarkson. She's from here. She's from Massachusetts. How much is Boston really going to be able to pay her? If I'm Buffalo and now I have the means with a salary cap to outbid someone for a player like that, and you've already got this core being what it is, you throw the bag at her. Why not? That's a real thing we can do now. And that's crazy. Like, it just blows my mind. I'm going to be so annoying about it. But what do we think about expansion? Where do you think they're going to go, guys?
You brought up an interesting point. How do you think Boston fit everybody in right now?
I think they probably just like, all right, your salary can only be this much, but you will never have to buy another piece of equipment as long as you play here, basically. Like,
as long as you draw breath.
Yeah, like, and they have a lot of sponsors, like the Oxygen sponsor on the bench, where it's like, do you need that? No, but like, enough of those things is going to tip the scales, probably.
Yeah, I agree. You wanted to jump into expansion?
Yeah, where do you think they're going to go? I want to know.
Oh, I have so many feelings on this, because like, from thinking like big picture, I'm like, wouldn't it be fun if the Whitecaps had more of like a geographic rival? But then like, I've seen people begging for a Pittsburgh team for so long. And I'm like, you know what? Like, we had the All-Star game there those years ago and stuff. Like, I hope it's a city that makes sense. That's all I'll really say. And I also hope they keep in mind some of the things we just spoke about in terms of talent pools. Don't place it right next to something else, for the love of God. Like, don't create an unnecessary competition for local talent.
Yeah.
But also look at things like, hey, you know, Wisconsin doesn't have an NHL team. And there's a crap load of players from Wisconsin. And there's the University of Wisconsin. And there's like, what, 19 D3 schools in Wisconsin?
There's an AHL
like,
team.
There's the AHL team, but like, there's a lot there. Like, I've always thought that would be a really fun place to look at, but I know we've talked about Detroit, now you talked about Pittsburgh, but I don't know. I've been super curious about Pittsburgh. I'm really curious to see what happens specifically with what players, or the players who end up signing in for the Montreal team, just because I feel like the PW has such deep roots specifically in Montreal. And I feel like that's will be a big trial, but with that big piggy bank, it's for a lot of players, that's going to make all the difference in the world. It's like, oh yeah, I can do this for, and then still have the summer off or do whatever I want during the summer. Sounds good. Where do I sign? So we'll have to see. What do you think, Eleni?
Well, in Montreal, part of it to me too is also like, even if you can't convince, you don't have to convince everybody. not everybody's going to get to play. So if you're someone who like only plays when the Olympians are gone or they come back and you're playing like 5 minutes a night, and then the PHF team in Montreal is like, we will pay you $45,000 to come play here and you will never play less than 10 minutes for a day of your life.
Power play one.
Literally, like you're going to quarterback the first power play. To me, and I'm not a hockey player, but like, that's a no-brainer. And it's not a slight on the PWHPA. It's just like they want to play. The whole thing, the whole point of this is that they want to play. So I don't think they need to convince everybody. I think it'll be really interesting to see if it ends up being a situation where the players who may feel like leftovers are the ones who end up signing. I mean, we've seen the energy that that brings to a hockey team. I think that the Whale this season came in knowing that they were heavy underdogs, and they've absolutely kicked the shit out of everything in front of them this season because of it. And I could see a Montreal team having very close to that energy. So I'm excited about it. I think they're going to go to Detroit. I know that the infamous Barstool leak, they were going to put a team in Detroit anyway. So it makes sense to do. There's plenty of players from the Michigan, Detroit area, or players with ties there. There's no Division I hockey programs there, which is the biggest hesitation for me. But I think it's doable, and I think it makes sense given that Madison Packer is from there. I don't know if I can imagine her wearing a different jersey, but if you give her a hometown team, I can't imagine she wouldn't go home. And that could be kind of a fun marketing thing. It's close to Minnesota. I think it's either going to be Detroit or it's going to be like Philly or Pittsburgh. And I would be fine with either. I think Philly's a tough sell because it overlaps a little with the Ribs market being what it is. I would love Pittsburgh. I know the Penguins were kind of in and out and in and out on it a couple of years ago. And if they could just get in, if we could just get them in, their facilities are incredible. So I think that would be a really fun place to have a team. If I could pick, I would put the team in Pittsburgh, but I'm not picking. So
if I had a pick, I would also go Pittsburgh. I think that's for all the reasons that you laid out, it's a great spot, and you have that RMU pipeline right there where you can bring the players maybe from around the league that are scattered that have played there, and they love that area and that town. With the expansion, I wonder, and there was talk of, you know, they want to do the two teams next year and then maybe two more the following year. I'm curious what you both think about, again, this maybe being a ploy to bring those players back, right? You put a team in Montreal and Pittsburgh, and then next go around, you go Calgary and Chicago, where you're starting to branch out a little bit more west. You have players that have connections there. You have a pool of players that maybe Minnesota is not hogging up all the Midwest players anymore. And a player might want to go play top line power play minutes for Chicago when in Minnesota, maybe they're only getting, you know, a few minutes here or there, or they're an extra, or they're a goalie that's not playing. That's another twist to this that I haven't even thought about until I just came out of my mouth with goalies is, you know, with goalies, there's only certain X amount of spots, right, to go around. And while we have seen a lot of kind of changing of the guard in certain places, we've also seen a player like Lev stick around for a really long time. And what Boston has done with their goalies, their wealth of talent that they have there, maybe those players move on to get a starting gig somewhere else. That's also something to look forward to. But it's going to be interesting with the expansion. If you start to bring some of those other players back or in back into the fold, so to speak, does that maybe push out some of the other players that have maybe still want to play that, you know, put in the, lack of a better term, blood, sweat, and tears into building this up to what it was. And now all of a sudden, when the merry-go-round stops, there's no seats left for them. That's something that I wonder about, but I also think that, you know, the more teams you add, the more spots that opens up, and the goal is to make as many as we can, right? So that's kind of where I'm at. I would love to see Pittsburgh, and you can go Pittsburgh, Montreal, you know, Minnesota and Buffalo or Toronto as a one division, and have the other East teams grouped together as another division. That I think would be probably the way that they're going to lean, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think thinking about, I mean, and this is of course something that I thought about too. Like, I don't want to see someone who has played since day one or close to day one lose their spot. But I also think when people talk about it, sometimes we forget that the coaches are the ones ultimately making this decision. And I know that there are coaches in this league who have been approached by players who maybe feel that they could walk onto any team in this league, and even objectively skills wise, probably could theoretically, who have said, no, I'm sorry, I like the team that I have. And the culture in my locker room is important. And even if you are better than my third pair defenseman, you're not playing here. I'm sorry, there's no room for you. And I do wonder, I mean, there's obviously some kinds of players that you have a really hard time saying no to. But I wonder how much of that you might see from coaches and GMs being like, listen, I know you're really good, but I like what I have here, and how much that might change, you know, the whole dynamic. And I do think that you're right. To me, it seems like a very transparent, like, look, we're adding two teams next year. If you guys want to come play, we will build it for you. And I think that's a great message to send, because it's, I don't know. It's a message, a moving forward message, not a insulating message. And it, you know, the players who most of the players on the U.S. women's national team, for example, are Midwestern players. There's a handful of them that you might see in New York, Connecticut, in Boston. But I mean, that's like, you could build basically an entire Wisconsin team out of that roster. So if those players are like, we want to play, I think it would be, I would be 0% surprised to see the league be like, all right, Wisconsin expansion sounds great. We're doing it. We're going to Milwaukee. Like, I think that they're very open to doing that. And I think they would be foolish not to. And I would not be surprised if the message that's being sent to those locker rooms gearing up to the Olympics is like, you just let us know. You want a Calgary team? We'll make it happen. You know, and they should. I mean, I think the Calgary hub for the PWHPA has been screwed a little bit with COVID, where like the other hubs are closer together and it's been easier for them to play. And they've just like not had ice time and not had anyone to compete with. And I can't imagine that if you were like, all right, we'll do a Calgary expansion, I bet you a bunch of them would be like, I just want to play, man. I'll do it. I don't care. I just want to play. So we'll see what they
do. And if I'm the Minnesota owner, I'm saying, you know, put some teams out here so I don't have to fly to every damn game. And yeah, spend all this money on travel when it's, you know, it's a little bit of an unfair thing in there and not in their favor. It's just, I can't see how they wouldn't put at least one of the teams out there, whether it's this upcoming year or the following year. And Pittsburgh, like you said, you know, that makes great sense because of not only the pool of players, but the proximity to Buffalo and to the Midwest. Like, that's, it's a little bit of an easier jaunt for the Whitecaps too.
Okay, so let's talk about the press release, because I got my feelings hurt. I'm going to be honest. I felt a lot of anxiety. I felt a lot of fear, and I don't like that. And to me, it makes me concerned that whoever wrote that press release like didn't know the lore of the sport well enough to realize what they were doing. It was like the equivalent of when your parent texts you and they're like, can you call me, or like, can we talk? Like, oh god.
I try not to be, I think a lot of people know, I try not to be mean or put people down or take me the shots of people, but I always find it really fascinating when there's this unawareness of language and word choice in media relations and public relations. Like, it is an integral part of something like a press release, the you know, the language you choose, and you know what you leave. Like, most people are like, hey, is this is either really good or a disaster. It's completely, but like, it's polar. It's going to be great or it's going to be terrible. And a not well kept secret of the women's hockey space is we have all gotten really used to terrible. Like all of us are like doomsday preppers for when is the next like load of shit going to hit the fan and we're all screaming and just trying to figure out if we can keep doing this or we have lost our sanity finally. So it was less than great. And 7 in the morning was a choice as well. And, you know, I look at that as like, okay, well, what were they hoping to achieve with what they put out there in the releases? Create buzz, I guess. I mean, they created buzz, but not the sort of buzz they wanted. They wanted all the, yeah. I think it was just they just whiffed. And to the point of like maybe even taking a little bit of like splendor away from really what is a slam dunk great announcement. But yeah, I don't know. It's funny because it also it kind of encapsulates the whole like 25 million, but folks, we still got a lot of work to do with little things like this that seem to elude confident execution here and there. And again, I know a lot of people are just trying to do their best, so I'm not trying to crap on anyone, but it was definitely a choice to do it this way.
I have to say another choice was not letting the players know beforehand. That was...
Oh, that little thing, man.
That's a minor oversight. My bad. I forgot to put you guys in the group chat.
You know, I have a...
I don't know if you guys want to know these sort of things.
I have a couple of players that I go to, you know, anytime something like this comes up, we hear we're getting an announcement and I'm like, hey, what's going on? What can you tell me? And they're like, first time I'm seeing it. When did you get this? What time did you get this email? And I'm like, I don't know, like an hour or two ago. Yeah. I don't know. You know, I will say that, you know, one of those players was Allie Thunstrom, and she was obviously down in Jacksonville with the ECHL thing, which I thought was awesome that they were able to go down there and be a part of that. And she mentioned that how, you know, fantastic they were treated. But Jojo Boynton was down there as well. And they got to talking with her and Allie ended up saying that she didn't tell them what was going on, but she said it's something that they worked really hard for. But didn't really say, you know, she kind of gave hints that it was maybe salary cap related, but, or maybe expansion based, but as far as a definite answer, her and Demps had no idea what was going on. They were, you know, just as surprised, as we were. And that's why I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, once again, our fearless leader, MJ, she asked me to kind of gauge the reactions of some of the players because, they really didn't have any prior knowledge of it. So it was kind of neat to be able to go back and forth with them a little bit and get their reactions, which went up on our lovely website, the Ice Garden today. But yeah, that was something that kind of blew my mind that, you know, it didn't seem like anybody knew, whether it was staff, players, maybe just they actually were able to keep a small circle for once, which is that's how you don't let information get out, right? But the way that they kind of put a scare into everybody is, you know, it is what it is. We live through it, and you know, it's just another thing we can laugh about. And
you're so forgiving, Dad.
If you were going to make $20,000 more next year, would you want to know, or would you want to just be? Oh, by the way, everyone knows.
No, surprise me.
Yeah, surprise me with this life-altering thing.
That's the thing. Like, we're also like, so many of us are so pissed off that the players didn't get told, and they don't give a shit at all. I feel like sometimes, yeah,
I'm sure they don't care. They're like, "Are you kidding me? I'm gonna get."
They
paid
really don't care.
Twice,
and it's funny because, like, yeah. I think this happens a lot as someone who like talks to players a lot. Like, I'll see people bent out of shape about something on the timeline, and the players are like, I literally didn't even notice that, and I don't care at all. Like, the priorities that the players have versus the fan and even sometimes media priorities, and they don't have to be the same. I don't think it's a bad thing, but sometimes I, like, and when I get really pissed off about something, I think about it, and I'm like, how much does this actually matter to the people who, like, ultimately are the most important in this equation? And, like, if they're not mad about it, do I think that it's good business sense to tell them? Yes. Is that a lot of non-disclosure agreements to sign for a league that doesn't have a general counsel or like in-house attorney? Yes, that's a huge undertaking. And it would be a lot of money to pay a law firm for someone like me to sit and do that all day. Like, it would cost a lot more than them just being like, look, five people are going to know, you're all going to sign NDAs and we'll kill you if you talk. Like, I mean, whatever it takes, right? But yeah, I mean, the GMs didn't know, the coaches didn't know. I think that the initial reaction that I was getting was that people were scared initially. And then like, as they started to talk to each other about it, they were like, well, it can't be bad because someone said something like this the other day, and they sort of started to piece it together. And then eventually I was able to get someone to tell me, oh, I can't tell you what it is, but it's good and it's financial. And I was like, all right, Christ. Well, all right. That's like a smaller, you know, but I mean, it was crazy. It was really a crazy thing for the players not to know. I understand it logistically, but it's just like, it's so hard to decide what the right thing was there. And the optics of like, here's the thing. I think if the press release had been nailed, like if they had hit the press release out of the park, it would not have mattered that the players didn't know. The only reason that it mattered that they weren't told is because it sounded like everyone was going to die tomorrow. So it was like, are you sending the players to the gallows and not telling them? And the reason we were anxious about it is because we have trauma. Because I was in the middle of taking a fucking, sorry, you can cut that. I was in the middle of taking a goddamn antitrust exam. It was like a take-home, like an 8-hour take-home law exam. And I take a break to go to the bathroom and I check my phone and the C2HL is dead. Like, and nobody knew. They didn't tell the players. We were all like, oh my God. And I had to go back and finish the exam and I passed. But like, that's the trauma that we're all holding. So if we had seen a press release that was like, I don't know, the PHF and its investors tomorrow will make an announcement regarding the growth of the league and sport.
Yeah, a nice word like growth instead of a verbal guillotine, yeah, which is what
I think
we got.
That we wouldn't have been as upset that the players didn't know. We would have been like, all right, it's a great surprise. And they knew they were going to be fine. So it's kind of just a combination of things that makes us all like, all right, you didn't tell anybody? I don't know.
I was scared.
I was also scared.
I was very scared. Yeah, I expected something pretty bad to happen. But I think that's also because, like Eleni said, is we've all been kind of conditioned with women's hockey trauma. Like, I still remember the C-Dubs news. I was like, what about China money? Where'd China money go? Now. Wasn't that a whole nice thing that made this all good?
Never know where that money went.
China money good. We also wanted to quickly touch on the PA's role. And I know, Dan, you know, I know you report on this for TIG. The players asked for that extension for naming a head. And then we got our head of the PA and Alex Notcher. I think January 1st, they had to have somebody in place?
6th, right?
Oh, okay. And then it's like, so this happens like 2 weeks into Alex Sinatra's tenure as the head of the PA, which is pretty interesting to me because I know she tweeted, like, you know, she was up at 4 a.m. talking to a member of the Board of the Governors. And like, a big part of me is like, shouldn't the PA be super duper involved in things like salary cap and, you know, how many resources and money and treasure are going to players? But the other part of it is, like, the thing we don't talk about a ton is the role of the PA has, like, when I think of, and we don't want to make this about men's hockey, especially on this podcast, but like the NHLPA almost has like an adversarial role to the NHL by its nature. Because why? Because where are its priorities? Like the NHL, Gary Bettman, serve owners. The NHLPA is there to serve players. And for many years, the PA of the then named NWHL and the league itself had to kind of walk in lockstep with each other. Otherwise, nothing would have worked. And we have to have more resources in there for, you know, where the PA can really step up and say, actually, that's not cool with us. We're not going to do it that way. Right. And I feel like this announcement gets us a lot closer to the PA having more agency, a louder voice, and demanding things like, hey, the next time some shit like this happens, we need to be at the table. Not 4 a.m. the day of the announcement, but like before things roll out. And I really hope that's the case because you know, when, like we've already talked about with players, like negotiating, needing to know what the money is out there, the PA has to be, have more power to it. More money going to players means the PA needs to be that much more invested in protecting them and serving their interests.
One thing I'm curious of, and just, and this is all I'll mention on the PA here, is, and something I touched on very briefly in the column I just submitted. It really struck me as odd that some teams were marketing certain players before the season started in the off season with, you know, their face likeness on merchandise other than the normal jersey stuff. And it just really caught me off guard. Like, why are they only doing this for a player A, B, and C when you have a whole roster of players? And why aren't those other players getting that same luxury or attempt at that luxury? So I wonder if the PA director can help in that regard. I'm not a legalese person. That's, again, out of my wheelhouse. I try and stick to the on ice product. But that's something that really bothered me and stuck with me in the off season. And it's something I hope can be an equal playing ground for everybody as we go forward here. Now that they have this in place, you know, they were all negotiating their own contracts over the summer with no director of the Players Association. Now, again, you know, how much are you really able to get and all that, but you know, it is a part of it when you have a GM that has to fit in 23 slots, and each slot is only allotted, you know, X amount, and you have to give some players a little bit more, and that means less for other players. So those are all interesting questions that I have as we go forward into this new era with a new director of the Players Association.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see what they do. I don't want to go on a whole tangent about it. I'm sure in a later podcast I'll talk about legally the landscape of unionizing and contracts and stuff. That's probably for another time. But let's finish up the podcast by talking about the playing that's happening now instead of stuff that's going to happen later. So I literally don't remember the last time I watched the Boston Pride play a hockey game. Like, I could not tell you when it was. It was definitely not this year.
It wasn't this year, that's for sure.
The Pride we've gotten to see have been kind of what we expect, but like you said, it's been a little bit since we've actually seen them play a hockey game, because they had two series postponed due to COVID protocol, which, you know, it's interesting that that hasn't been disastrous to the PHF, just in terms of like the scale of the league and stuff, because normally that would be like, oh, we're totally boned. But it turns out it's like, no, it's okay. We're rescheduling things. But I mean, there's a lot of buzz about Toronto right now. Boston is 6-2. They're doing really well. They're still the Boston Pride. They, like, everyone is like, I wonder what Amanda Boulier is going to be like there. Turns out she's going to have an assist on every goal they score. And looking at that team, it's like, all right, so what goalie is starting tonight? It doesn't matter, because they have like three of the top six or seven goalies in the league. So it's like, Lovisa Salander, goaltender of the year a couple of years ago, is she even in net tonight? Ah, they'll be fine. That's kind of where things aren't with the Pride, which is just wild to me. It's like, oh yeah, we're going to add Callie Flanagan. Just at the, you know.
I think it's fun. I think it's fun because they're still beatable.
They are still beatable, yeah.
They're really good, but it doesn't feel like every game I'm like, this is going to be really ugly. I think the problem with the Pride is like, if you are visiting them, because I'm at all their home games, I am not sure that it is physically possible to sweep them at home. Because it feels like if you play your guts out that first game, you might be able to grit out a win, and then you're dead the next day. There's just nothing you can do. They're going to score 6-7 goals on you.
That happened in Minnesota a ton two seasons ago, right? Like that the 24-game season where Minnesota would give them like hell one game, the season where Boston won like every game but one. And then the next game, they'd be like flat. They're like, oh, no, we're done. Tank. We tried it all yesterday. We're out of gas. Yeah, what we tried yesterday was all we had. But yeah, I agree, because like their depth isn't what it was. And even though, you know, they have like three of the top five defenders in the league and everything else, like they're not this juggernaut that can't be beat. And what's so fun to me now is like looking at the landscape of the league is like every team has the potential to be significantly better by the end of the season. And that includes the teams that are at the top of the table, which is really fun. But Boston's Boston. I remember like Demps went a few games without scoring and had kind of a slow start in points. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? And then she Dempsied and got a bunch of points. So the pride are the pride. But like you said, they're not like invulnerable and unbeatable. But it would be nice to watch them play a hockey game again.
I'm going to be there this weekend. I'm excited.
Well, make sure you take pictures to prove that it happened.
I will be annoying about it. I always am. Also, Michelle will take pictures. That's literally
pretty sure Model T's were on the road last time the Pride were on the ice.
I think what's going to happen with Boston here is the way the schedule is played out, like you guys said, with the cancellation and everything. They have a lot of games to make up on everybody that's in front of them, which is Toronto and Connecticut, right? Connecticut, I think, has six games left, and Boston has like half their schedule left, or more than half their schedule. And with the rescheduled game, the rescheduled games in Buffalo, those are as of right now, is this day, what did you say it was, January 19th? There's two games scheduled, Boston at Buffalo, after everybody else is done playing their games. They made it the weekend of March 19th and 20th. And how important are those games going to be for Boston to, you know, do they need those six regulation points to clinch first place or second place or, you know, we don't know what the standings are going to look like by then, but I think that's really, really going to be interesting. You know, I agree with everything you guys said there. I don't think they're as invincible anymore. I do think that, you know, maybe around the league, the focus has kind of shifted to the target is kind of on Toronto now, just because of, you know, new kids on the block. They've come in, they're kind of just knocking the crap out of everybody. It'll be interesting. I think Boston's last road games are up in Toronto, so those games are probably going to be really huge too. And you know, they're not a team that I would bet against necessarily, but I also don't have, like you said, that feeling of every time they step into the rink, like, you know, it's going to be 8-1. I think those days are done. I like the additions that they made, but I also wonder if it's, you know, it's hard to keep everybody happy and all the offensive firepower they have, whether it's from a forward or a defender, there's only one puck to go around and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out over the season. I know when they brought Flanagan in, a couple of girls were like, oh crap, like I'm probably going to get less ice time now. And some of the other ones were just like, hey, this makes our team better. Cool. Let's roll with it. So it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out with them. But I expect them to be obviously in the final four.
You know who else is going to be in the final four this year, Dan? The Connecticut Whale, baby. They are so hungry, and not just for plankton. I am enjoying it so much. They are so fun to watch. There's so much talent on that team that I think went greatly underrated at other places that they played. And it's just so exciting to watch. That's pretty much all I have to say about them. I'm just so excited. I think they're so much fun.
I love the Whale. Like, I've been waiting to, like, I love the Whale in a way where it's like, you can do it.
We all know they can do it.
I know it's hard. And this year it feels like all the blood, sweat, and tears that Shannon Turner has had to put on the ice, like, is all like coming back tenfold. Like all the anguish players on that team have had to go through. It's tremendous. Like looking at the way that team is built, looking at their scoring depth, what they have on the blue line. Like I still have some questions about goaltending because Abby Ives has a lot of wins. Abby Ives' numbers aren't that great, but
hasn't been tested a lot.
They block so many shots. Yeah, hasn't need to be tested.
Like, because they block so many shots, and they also have the puck the whole game because they overnight became a puck possession team, which is tremendous because that's one of the reasons they're fun is Kennedy Marchment, whenever she wants, can skate the length of the ice with the puck because she's so big and so skilled and such a smooth, beautiful skater that zone entries are automatic.
I also think, like, they very much have become what I remember from when Buffalo was like really dominant is a team that's like so big and mean that there's just not a whole lot you can do about it. Yeah. And what we saw this last weekend is that it's very easy to fall into the trap of like, well, I can be bigger and meaner. You're not going to be. You will lose. It doesn't matter who you are. You will lose that fight. And you've got to, I think the only way to do it really is to get into a track meet with them. And not everybody can do that. Not everybody has the personnel to run them off the ice. So they're scary.
It took them a little while to find their footing. That first game, the very, very first game of the season here in New Jersey when they played the Riveters. I think the Riveters kind of caught them off guard a little bit. But since that, whenever they scored that six straight goals in the second game, it's just been the sky is the limit. They are so deep. Mike pointed it out the other day on Twitter, over the weekend, rather. They dispatched and dismantled the Riveters this weekend, and they didn't even have Wolfie. Like,
oh, my God, they didn't have her.
She didn't play in either of those games. That's how deep their lineup is. You have a line with Emily Fluke and Kaylee Hutchison and I forget who the third player was on the line, but you have Crawley, who's a natural center, playing on the wing with Vlasic and Weber, I think. It's just they just come at you. And I think that's one of the biggest differences for them this year is that forward depth with actual players that you can rely on in kind of all situations, where maybe they had just the defensive players on the roster in previous iterations of that franchise. And the defense have been very active. Adding Allie Monroe has been huge. She plays a ton. Tori Howren playing a full season. We saw her for four games last year.
Yeah.
If you want to call that. Now we see like a full body of work. She moves the puck. She's got a hard shot. She's willing to kneel down and block those shots in the zone. They've just been dynamite. And I'm stoked to go see them play this weekend against Toronto. That's awesome.
It's going to be awesome, yeah. The one thing I want to add about Connecticut, something I love is like, I feel like their most effective and biggest identity role players, like the Casey Andersons and the Hannah Babies, are still there. Like they got so much deeper, but their identity, like the players that like Casey Anderson, like forechecking, working her tail off, like doing that thing, like that's a Connecticut Whale hockey shift. Just go, 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 go. All right. And then it's like, oh, the other team's tired. Guess what?
Now, Mike, would you say that the Connecticut Whale have a strong forecheck? I don't want to be like this because I actually don't think any of my friends play for the Whale. But if you are on the Whale and you're listening to this, please be my friend. Emily Fluke, I would consider you to be my friend.
I'm going to make sure that the Whale listen to it now.
Good, because I want to be friends with all of them. I love them so much. And I think what I love the most about the Whale is the vibes. Like the culture in that locker room is so good. And they love their coach so much. And they're just like, no one has ever bought in harder than the Whale have bought in this season. So yes, I am pulling for them. I love it. And now we'll talk about the Riveters, who I think are having perhaps the opposite experience as the Whale are.
Did you see them wave goodbye to the Riveters at the end of the game on Sunday?
It was very fun. I enjoyed it. I am worried about the Riveters. I sort of anticipated being worried about them. I don't know that I would say that I'm surprised necessarily. But at the same time, I also feel like the losses they had on defense over the offseason actually ended up being worse than I thought they would be. Like, I knew it was going to be bad. But did I think it was going to be this bad? No, I don't think I did. And it feels like it's not entirely a personnel problem. Like it definitely, they just like, as soon as they take the ice, I feel like they look exhausted already. So I don't really know. Sometimes you just get in your head and they're in this rut where it seems like they just are having a hard time mentally. And so even if they have the skill on the ice to make it happen, it's like they're fighting themselves.
Yeah, the first four games, their offense helped disguise some of their shortcomings. They had 17 goals in the first four games. They have four goals in the last four games. Like, when the Packer-Russo score nine line doesn't score, they're big problems. Like, and that's something that, like, we've seen in the past from the Riveters, where they're a one-line team, and if that one line doesn't get it done, like, this team misses Rebecca Morse, they miss Kate Leary, I look at this team, I'm like, oh, if they didn't sign Colleen Murphy, where would they be right now? They'd be in so much trouble. Just because they didn't really have another player who brought what she brought to the table. But I like the Riveters goaltending. I like their first line. I like a lot of the players they have in place, but I was pretty down on the Riveters heading the season. I had them toward the bottom of, like, where I expected them to finish. And I know a lot of, I've been covering the Riveters since 2015 with Dan on the beat. And so I know a lot of Riveters fans follow me, and I know a lot of people are like, Mike, what the F? But I looked at that team and I looked at what they lost and what they tried to replace it with. And I was like, guys, this doesn't add up. Like, this is more in the red than you want it to be. When other teams across the board, every other team feels like they got better. So yeah, it's been really interesting. I'm waiting to see if some scoring depth can truly emerge. Like, they need the Janika line to score. Like, if the Janika line doesn't score, they're in dire straits for the rest of the year.
Well, the problem is it's hard to score when you're in the box.
Very hard to score when you're in the box. Very hard to score when you're in your own zone.
I think my thing is, like, I have watched many a hockey team that is a one-line team. And usually what happens when it's a one-line team is that you break the lineup. And they did that last game, and it actually was okay for a while. And then the next day it was different again. And I just don't know, like, I understand that top line has historically done really well together, but, like, if you need to drive offense, you put Kendall Cornine on the third line, and you play those three lines equally. Like, I think they need to start looking in more creative places for scoring instead of trying to, like, if the first line's not scoring, they're not scoring. And that's what you can't just keep, like, hoping they're going to do it. If they're not going to, you've got to give other players more opportunities, because I think they actually do have more offensive skill than they think they do. And it feels like the players aren't getting the opportunity. And on top of that, now Madison Packer is playing, like, such a ridiculous number of minutes per game, trying to drag them into the game. Like, that's not fair to her either.
No, and it takes away from her game too, because she's a player who's like, all right, we want Packer to kill penalties, right? We want Packer on the first power play unit. We want Packer on the top line. It's like, how you expect her to be the sort of impact player she needs to be when she's out there killing penalties and doing everything else? And it's that thing where you kind of need to develop a trust in your role players to be like, we know these other players can kill penalties. We can save Pack for, so she has another half a year at even strength on the power play. And I think about a player like Kelly Babb, stock who they probably needed to be a big offensive force. She has 16 penalty minutes and 4 points in 8 games. Like, it's fine. Those are fine. Like, the penalty minutes are good, but the production's fine. But you need more than that out of a player like Babstock, who I'm sure takes up not an insignificant amount of their cap, whatever that might be. And, she's a player who they obviously, for a whole lot of reasons, invested a lot in, both on and off the ice, to have her on the team. And I think that's something that's, we don't approach with a 10-foot pole a lot sometimes talking about it, but it's interesting to me that you look at where offense is coming from, where it isn't coming from. Like, I mean, there's got to be goals from other players other than Rebecca Rousseau and Madison Packer. Like, that's the way it's got to be if they're going to win hockey games. The blue line doesn't score. On that team, the blue line doesn't score.
Like, you're telling me there's not a single person on that team that can be a net front presence? There are so many girls on that team that are big enough to stand in front of the net and tip Brooke goals Avery. In Canute. And we saw it happen over the weekend. We saw someone redirect a goal. Like,
I think Knutson's super
underutilized. I agree. If someone plays well and then you reward them by not putting them in a position to do more of what they just did, that's how you're going to get that energy on the ice that we're seeing, when they just feel like they're not having a good time. They need to have fun again. They need to fall in love again.
And they did not have fun playing the Whale. They looked pissed from the word go in both those games. Like, they couldn't keep up. And like you said, they tried to play as physical and as big as the Whale, like playing like the Buttes in their prime 2015 to 2017. And there was just, not only did they get bullied, like get shoved around just as much as they tried to shove around, but they played in their own zone the entire game. Like, they couldn't beat the Whale playing that style of game, and then they can't, like you said, they can't beat them in a track race. Like, they can't beat them in, like, a, you know, open ice trading chances thing, and that's brutal. I also think it's interesting we haven't gotten to see a lot of Lenka Chermova, who I think they expected to be a bigger part of that defense. We haven't got to see a lot of her play, just from obligations with the Slovakian national team, and then she hasn't been in the lineup a lot. So there's a lot to think about with the Riveters. I hope things turn around and stabilize, because there's enough talent there for them to be a very good hockey team. It's a question of putting all the pieces together.
They tried to rebuild that D on the fly, right? Over the summer, you picked one defense from Minnesota and one defense from Toronto and one from Buffalo and one from Connecticut. And you kind of mashed them all together and kind of just throwing them out there, hoping it's going to go all right. And it obviously hasn't, so to speak, in the beginning at least. As you both have mentioned, they try to, you know, when they were most successful, they try to bully other teams. And I think when the other team kind of hits you back in the mouth and you don't know how to react, that's what happens when you see what we saw this weekend. I think they got better as the Sunday's game went on. And they were kind of maybe going a little blow for blow, but not enough shots being generated. Too many times, and I think this really started with the Toronto game. It was too many times where they went into the zone and never got the shot on or got the puck to the net. It was a missed pass, and then boom, it goes the other way. It was a shot that goes wide, and boom, it goes out of the zone, and you're in your own zone again for another minute 30 seconds. And I think another, they really missed like a present, like that calming presence of Kira Dostal. Arena. It's really shown on that back end. She was so good at making those outlet passes too, to get the forwards going through the neutral zone, like a Russo, like a Cornine, like a Mally Rushton. I'm sure they would love to see those kind of passes to spring players like McLean and Knutson. And what happens is when they start falling behind, they do like you, I think you said, where it's the Packer line, and then it's another kind of mishmash line, and then it's back to the Packer line. And then by the time you get to the end of the game, they're dead tired. And I think I would do kind of what Eleni was saying, where, you know, move Cornine around to give another line energy, because once you start zipping up and down the ice, those line mates are going to want to try and keep up with her, or the defense like Murphy or like a Rachel Aide. Like, they can jump into the play too. Their defense has been good when they're not playing defense. And, you know, it's kind of weird to say that, but they've been good in the offensive zone, right? Murphy's had a really nice start. Rosa Lever has played great. Rachel Aide this weekend, I thought she was probably their best defense. And she's another player, too, that you can, if you're not going to use her on the point in the power play, stick her in front of the net, because she's like 6'1", like, just let her just stand there in front of the goalie, and you know, it's going to create a little bit of chaos, and that's what they need. They need to not put 12 shots on goal over the course of a game. You know, I don't know if that was the final tally, but that's kind of what it's like.
I think it was 18, yeah, or 17. It wasn't good.
You're getting maybe, you know, 8 in the first period and 8 the rest of the game. Like, it's there's you know, and obviously part of it is what the defense is doing, but that Rives defense is reminds me a lot of, as we transition here to the next team we want to talk about, right? Buffalo's defense, where they're very good when they're not playing defense, but they need to be better at that so they can stop giving up so many goals and chances. There was times this weekend where they looked like they were just kind of like spinning around like turnstiles, because Toronto was, you know, hitting these cross-ice passes, and you just find them just twirling with their sticks, like, where is the puck? Boom, it's in the back of the net. Where is boom? And they, you know, they have to be better on the defensive end. I think their forwards are starting to find a little bit of a groove in Buffalo. They do have a lot of new faces, and they have had a lot of practice time, but their game schedule has been like, they started their season like 3 times already. Like, okay, this is it. We're going to start our season now. We got 2 games this weekend, 2 games next weekend, and then the games get canceled. Excuse me. And then all of a sudden they're like, all right, we got to start our season again. It's a new year. It's actually 2022. We're going to start our season. Okay, these games got canceled. Next weekend, though, we're going to start our season. You know, and I think they're at, like, I think they have the fewest games now, right? They're at 7 games.
Yeah, they're the fewest.
So they have a lot of work ahead of them. And hopefully some, once they get into some repetition, some continuity, some just like normal schedule. Like, I know they practice a lot, but practice only take you so much, and you need to get out there against those other teams that aren't your friends, you know?
I feel that might hurt the Sorry, we just saw a kitty cat. I feel like that probably hurts a team like Buffalo even more because they're so young, right? And they have a lot of players who are new to this league, a couple of players who are adapting to the North American game, like Jenna Suoko, who I think is really, like, each game she looks a little bit better. And, like, she's a player who it's really fun watching. It's like, oh, yeah, she's such a great player. Like, I want to see her play with someone like Taylor Akerzi more. Because, like, Akerzi, just shoot. Just shoot and be smooth and silky. And what can Jenna Suoko do? We can, like, she makes great plays. The reason I'm not doom and gloom about the Buttes despite their record is because their schedule's been crazy with the starting stopping. I think any team that had to play Toronto after that break would have had trouble. And they had two leads against Toronto in the first period, which is, I think, is important to remember. Like, when would we talk about the Buttes in that fashion where, like, for a period, they beat the Toronto Six flat out. Like, they're a better hockey team. And there's so much there in terms of players who can get better as the season goes along. I don't think we talk enough about Autumn McDougal. I don't think we talk enough about Kennedy Ganzer as players who can really become like core identity players in Buffalo. And that's why I'm excited. I do agree. It feels like there's room for upgrades on that blue line. It's funny because part of me is like, I really wish we got to see another year or two of Ali Mateau and MJ Pelletier. And like, I remember looking at the underlying numbers and like the underlying numbers weren't like tremendous or anything, but watching that as a pairing, I was like, I just like that pairing.
I would like to spread some propaganda.
Oh, propaganda.
I have some Buttes propaganda. I think that breaking up the panda line is a mistake. Yeah. I think you should keep the pandas together. I think that they play well separately, but they play better together. And the energy that they bring to the team, to the ice, when they are able to play together is worth it. And I understand why you would try to mix it up. And I'm, you know, they tried it, you know, it was fine. But I think that it's important to keep them together specifically. And I could see Buffalo, if they can make it happen, they have a lot to learn. But if they can do it, they could be a team that really makes a run for it through the end of the season, because they're going to have more games to play and they're going to have more opportunities to catch a team that might be on the bubble. And I could see them really, like, seriously becoming the kind of team by the end of the season that you're worried about. It's either going to be like that or it's going to be like this the rest of the season. And, like, to be honest, it's got to be difficult to be a Buttes fan and have gone from that season where you had Shannon Zabados and Blake Bolden and you know, your life was amazing and Matty Ilian and Haley Skamura were scoring like 75 goals a game to, you know, where we are now. But this is a Buttes team that you can feel good about the effort that they're putting in. And even if they don't turn it around on the ice, I know they're going to turn it around in the locker room. And next year, when a lot of these players come back, that's going to make a huge difference. So we'll see.
Well, Dan and I were talking about players like Diffendahl, players like Emily Harley. These are players who they can carry the puck, right? And like Cassidy Vinkel is also such a great puck carrier. Buffalo didn't have this a year or two ago, where you have these players who can really carry the puck through the neutral zone. That's there now. And then you have players like MJ who can spring players out of, you know, from the defensive zone. And I don't know, that has me feeling like things will get better before they ever get worse in Buffalo. That's just why I'm generally optimistic, is I think there's enough there. I like Ray Code. I like what Nate's building. I believe that it's going to go in the right direction.
I think just to finish off the Buffalo talk, I think they're a team where we kind of have to give them a little, maybe a little bit more rope. Maybe that's not the right term. I just I want to see them kind of after a couple of years together and see what the finished product is, because I feel like they are so young and developing. I know I'm pretty sure, Mike, we talked about this when Buffalo was here and we were at the game. Diffindahl is a player that she can dominate this league. Like if she had that confidence right now, she could dominate this league. And I don't think there might be very few players that could stop her. If she learns to carry the puck with confidence, like a Madison Packer does, oh my God, like, and just shield players off with her huge frame and just carry the puck to the net. Like players like Emily Fluke know how to do that. And she's a lot smaller than a Diffindahl. And a Harley too. Harley's another one where I know she's mainly D, but she can also carry the puck to the net. I just want to see more of that from them. I think they were, and I saw it again in Toronto, they were a little too timid, a little too indecisive. But I think more of that will come with reps, actual game reps and those kind of things, that will help them eventually gel. I think if we get down to a Final Four, if they Buffalo finds their way in there, they're a team that I'm not sure I'd want to play in a one and done.
Yeah, they could upset somebody.
In a one and done situation, I don't think I would want to play Buffalo. I think I would rather take my chances with maybe a Minnesota or a Riveters if I'm I don't even know what the format's going to be, but I'm just kind of thinking out loud. Like if you're in a Final Four game and you're in a one and done against a Buffalo team, like I don't know if I would want to be in that situation. Like, obviously, I'd feel confident in my team, but Buffalo's can be a pretty scary team if they put it all together.
Speaking of the Whitecaps, that's a team where I am very alarmed with what I've seen so far, because I feel like we need to give Amanda Levier like a flare gun or something. Like, we need to get Lev some help. It's been grim for Minnesota. And we talked a little bit about the Riveters and the Transit. Dan just waved a white flag. Like, we've talked about like the Riveters and puck moving D. I think about this a lot with how the Riveters could utilize players like Kendall Cornine and Rebecca Russo. Like, we all know who the Whitecaps' best players are. There's these fast wingers who can skate like the wind, right? Those players are only as good as the outlet pass that springs them and gets his own entry. And the Whitecaps can't get out of their zone because they lost Sidney Baldwin and Amanda Bouvier. And that is really, really rough. And they didn't have both of them for all of Lake Placid, but those were players who were there for a couple of years. And that's really, like, I don't know what more Amanda Levier could do to prove that she should have been the All-Star game. That's a whole other thing that I could do 3 hours on. But looking at like the Whitecaps, like Nicole Schammel doesn't have a goal.
0 points.
0 points for Nicole Schammel.
No goal, Shannon. Fuck. Hold on. Let me make that joke again. I want to make that joke again. You got to laugh like that again when I do make it correctly. No goal, Schammel. Nicole, if you're listening to this, I'm very sorry. I don't know what's going on there. It's really weird because I don't know. It's just like it feels like a ghost town sometimes. So like they're so confused and they don't know. I don't know. They need help. I'm not even sure where I would start. I think this Minnesota team may end up being the first like legit rebuild that we see in the salary.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Dan wants to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know we've been running for a while here and I don't want to make it longer than we have to. So I'm just going to say this about Minnesota. Maybe with the influx in salary cap, maybe they'll decide to start paying some of their defenders a little bit more to stick around. Because I have heard that's a reason why Amanda Bouvier didn't come back. I heard, she might have got, the term I heard was lowballed, and she deserved to go get more money, and she got it, and she's
go get paid
with a great team. With Sid Baldwin, she's obviously still out there. She was calling the Gophers game, I think, a week or two ago. So if they really needed her services, maybe they just didn't think that they wanted to pay her what she was really worth, and they decided to go a little bit younger, a different direction on the blue line, and they find themselves in this weird situation where they've over the years let these defenders kind of walk away when it's like, hey, this player is really good. Maybe we should keep her around. And, you know, that's kind of the way that it's always been, according to what people have told me. So we'll see with the influx of cash. Maybe things change a little bit and they start to really focus and rebuild that D. I think they have some nice pieces there, but I don't think it's as good as it can be. And as we've seen it be, obviously.
Now, Lenny, I want to read you a list. Are you ready?
I'm scared, but go ahead.
So it's Steph Anderson. It's Paizon. It's Megan Lawrence, Nicole Shammel, and a name I know I butcher every time I say it is Ashley Brikaliuk.
Brikaliuk.
All of them have no goals.
What?
In eight
wow.
games.
I don't even.
Some of those players were all-stars. Some of those players were expected to be top six, super productive players. Audra has one goal. Like, it's wild what's happened to. If it's not Jonna Curtis or Allie Thunstrom scoring, no one's scoring goals on that team. Lexi Lang has one goal. Nope, no assists. Lexi Lang! What's going on?
I hope they figure it out, you guys. I just don't know. I think this season might just be like this, and it sucks. And I'm so sorry to Amanda Levier. I mean, I'm sorry for all of them, but I'm a goalie, so for me, it's like, oh, man, she's trying so hard. Speaking of trying very hard, has Mykayla Grant-Mentis ever had to try in her life? Because I feel like when she skates, she just looks like she's cutting through butter. Like, everybody just parts around her, and she can just do whatever she wants.
She's faster sideways than most people are, like, skating forwards. Like, watching her skate around people is just like, and like, we got to see Megan Jacob through Stathletes did like a lot of underlying like stats with like zone entries and stuff, and like MGM is on top of every list. She's like in the top three of every metric we have. And I'm like, yeah, checks out. Because when you watch her play, she just goes around players. She goes through players. She stole the puck from MJ Pelletier and another Buttes defender while the Buttes were on the power play and scored from below the goal line, a shorthanded goal. And it's the sort of player you're like, are these people in the same league? MJ yeah. Pelletier is one of the best defenders in the league. And she just got, you know, just got completely turnstile, like turned around and had the puck taken away. Like, it's crazy to see how good MGM is.
If you're listening to this podcast and you have not watched a women's hockey game before, I know that there are some of you, and we're going to convert you, and that's awesome. We're so happy to have you here. If you remember earlier this season, there was a goal that Connor McDavid scored on the New York Rangers where he made every single person on the ice literally look like they were playing like peewee hockey.
Yeah.
It's like that watching Grant-Mentis play every single time. And it doesn't matter what team it is. It could be the next best team in the league and it wouldn't make a difference. She is just incredible. And the thing is about her, I think that you could pull her off of the sixth team and they would still be terrified. And that ultimately to me is the biggest reason why the Six are in the position that they are now, because like I there's still so many players behind her that obviously they can't do what she does, but they're just monstrous.
The big thing I'm looking at for the Six is like Mykayla Kava leaving was something where like the Six said, oh yeah, we knew about that. No one else knew about that. Like, that's a huge loss. That's like a top 10 forward in the league who isn't there. And it's also interesting, we talked about before, like tying it back to something we said earlier with opportunities, especially with goalies. Sam Ridgewell left to play in Sweden because she had a better opportunity to play, because she wasn't going to play with Elaine Chooley with a 955 save percentage and a 10-0-0 record. Like, Sam Ridgewell knew, I want to play hockey. I'm going to go back to Sweden. And more power to her. Go get paid, go get to play. But looking at Toronto, I was like, we'll have to see how they look without Kava in the lineup. And then, you know, we all know what they did to the Buttes and what, you know, an 8-point weekend from MGM looked like. So Toronto was just so fun. I don't think Dark Angelo gets enough respect for how great of a player she is. And like Taylor Woods and Lindsay Eastwood. And now you added Soroya Tinker to that blue line. Like, that team is so deep and so well-rounded. And like, they lose Kava. They bring in Marcuse. They bring in a player they already know what they're getting, like a great role playing forward. Like, it's just a really well-oiled machine is the only way I can describe it. And the dangerous part of the machine is really dangerous because she's the best player in the league.
really, really sharp, really, yeah, really just, sharp. Like really
just sharp. A really sharp, pointy thing named Michaela Grant Mentis.
So I found the Kava thing fascinating, that they knew that she had this out in her contract that it was until January 14th, right? So coach said she would have played, they would have had two games just postponed against Minnesota recently, right? So she, those would have been her two last games. That would have gave them what, like 14 games or no, what are they up to now? They've played 13. So she would have played 13 of 20 games theoretically, because she wouldn't have played this weekend. But I thought that was fascinating, but they also said that Marcuzzi has been practicing with them for 5 weeks, for 4 weeks rather. So they knew, you know, that those talks have been ongoing, and hey, it's, you know, come down and skate with us, see how you're doing. And Coach Jocelyn said, you know, he didn't know anything about her other than what he saw on video that he had watched from last season. He says, you know, I think she's this, that, or the other. He sees her in the game. He says, this is a great player. Like, she plays fast. She plays heavy. She's really smart. And the girls like her that are in the room. Leia Marino spoke to us after that game, and that was like almost like one of her, you know, I don't want to say idols, but somebody that she really looked up to as an upperclassman in at college at RMU. And when she signed there, was excited, and then like, oh, you know, Natalie can't play because of her, you know, work, her day job. And now she comes back into the room, and what does Marino do? She scores two goals. So she was a little jazzed up, obviously, but they are so deep. I mean, as you kind of elaborated on, it's just, if it's not MGM, it's Dark Angelo. One of the Woods girls might get you, whether it's
Emma Woods.
Emma Woods or Taylor Woods or Lindsay Eastwood. Like, one of them is going to get you at some point.
They got a whole forest full of Woods.
There's only some Woods on the ice at some point of the game, because they have so many of them that they just spread the wealth. But, and they're all great players. They played Taylor Woods at forward for a couple of games. And she was like,
it worked.
And it worked great. That's the craziest thing. It worked just fine.
She's
got
a power play goal. And she's playing on the, I think she was playing on that line with Curlew. And she's just doing, I think that was the Riveters weekend. She just like abused them like all weekend. And it was just like, it's amazing to me. I'm honest. You know, I wasn't really sold on a new team coming in and kicking the crap out of everybody. I didn't expect them to do this again. I looked at last season like, you know, last season wasn't even a season. Last season was show up, play a couple of games, and then show up again in a month and play two more games, and that's it. This is a real season, you know, we're as close to a real season as we can get to, and they are just kicking the crap out of everybody, especially if you go up to Toronto, where they have a little bit of an advantage with the bigger rink. They ran circles around the Riveters. We talked about the Buttes a little bit with the turnstiles this weekend. They are just something else, and I'm not going to overlook them or misjudge them anymore. They have a goalie that, other than, you know, I think up to Sunday, she had given up three goals in like five games or something like that. Like, and that,
Elaine Chooley still hasn't allowed a power play goal.
That's their goalie, but that's also everybody buying into the team defense and the team philosophy.
Yeah.
It's a new coaching staff from last year, too. And I found that fascinating that, you know, you brought in a whole new staff, and this team is just as good, if not better, than they were last season.
I think Angela James may know something about hockey. That's my hunch. Yeah.
I wonder if the power play might have something to do with Angela James.
A little bit.
I know a couple
it's
things.
Possible. Right? It's possible. I haven't, I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
Maybe a little something. Maybe a little something, something. Yeah. It's wild though. They're a really fun team to watch, but my, like, overall, my takeaway from what we've seen so far, cause you know, we had a little bit of hockey after the holiday break and we have some more hockey coming up this weekend, is like the parity this year is really in a good place. And there've been some years where it wasn't. And what I like this year is more and more, as great as some of these teams and as great as some of these players are, it does really feel like it's much closer to a level playing field. And that's only going to get better with the salary cap going up from stuff we talked about earlier. But the thing that I think I appreciate the most about this season so far is every fan base there's these emerging cores on teams. And it's interesting what Eleni said before about like, maybe it's time to look at like Minnesota and what the next chapter is, because like when I was kind of low on Minnesota heading the season, much lower than I think a lot of people were, because every year I'm like, how old is Winnie now? How old is Chelsea?
Hey,
listen, I've done a lot of work with aging curves in hockey. Like, it's not easy to be like an effective elite player in your late 30s. Like, it doesn't happen, let alone 40s and early 40s. So like, you look at that for that team, and then you look at some of the younger players, like Mikaela Grant-Mentis is still so young. She's just entering what we think is her prime. She'll only get better from here, which is just it breaks my brain. But you think about that, and you think about like, okay, this is fun. And then you think about, oh yeah, and now these players can get paid more, which means they can focus. The other thing I always think about with resources in women's hockey is people are like, oh, I don't like women's hockey, boo, boo, boo. And I like, imagine if they got to do it full time, if this was their sole focus, if they had skills coaches they could pay instead of having to work as skills coaches for other people. Like, if they could invest more time and energy into being the best possible hockey players they can be, we're going to slowly but surely start to see some of that. That's wild to me. And it might take a while to see like the fruits of that, but that's game-changing stuff, and I can't wait for it to happen.
So what you're saying is that Mikaela Grant-Mentis, who averages 2 points a game currently, right? If I'm not mistaken, she's maybe a shade over 2 points a game.
2.09.
So when she has the resources and the money to focus fully on playing hockey and not whatever else she does in her personal life, that I'm not sure what her day job is. So she's going to average 4 points a game.
I think it's 22 points. I think
it's okay. You're the math guy. I'm just, you know, you're the numbers guy. I'm the words guy. So if you say 22 points a game, then I think that, you know, this is going to be phenomenal. We're going to have a lot to write about, brother. But, you know, to that point, like if these players are putting up those kind of numbers, and, you know, Kaylee Hutchison, right? She played the other day. She worked an overnight shift as a nurse. Slept in the car on the way to the rink, and then played a game against her old team, picked up a win.
Picked up a bunch of points and a couple
greasy hits.
So she's going to be even better. Players like that are going to be even better when they're able to fully dedicate their training and time to preparing to be a hockey player more than putting on a pair of work shoes and going to work for 8 hours before you have to play a game.
I think you guys, Mike and Dan, I think you guys write that up so beautifully, because that's really what this podcast is all about, future considerations, right? So,
oh, well, Lenny.
All right, I'll stop. Michelle's telling me to wrap it up. She's booing me off the stage. Boo, tomato.
Round third, you're going home. Come on, let's go.
All right, yeah, I'm coming home. All right.
Yeah.
Seriously, thank you guys so much. If you listen to us, feel free to follow any of us on Twitter and follow the Ice Garden, which is how we all
read the Ice Garden, for goodness sakes.
Please do it. I promise you it's worth it. And you can only play Wordle once a day. So when you're done with that, please check the Ice Garden out. And have a great day, night, weekend, week, whatever time it is for you now.
Thank you. We love you. Goodbye.